welcome to the Frontside Podcast, the place where we talk about user interfaces and everything that you need to know to build them right.
Today, we're going to talk about big ideas.
And the future of Frontside.
Yeah. Starting, is Frontside a good idea? we're going to just talk about, how do you know that an idea is good? We've touched on it a couple times before. Like, how do you go about validating a big idea? How do you discover a big idea? What do you do?
And then, when you have big ideas like big test, what does that mean for the world? How do you make a big idea, an idea that a lot of people like and agree with and actually use on day to day?
Yeah, it turns out that it's not easy. There's a lot of work involved with that. A lot of it crystallized around the conversations we've been having about, what exactly is big test, and recognizing that big test isn't really a code base. It's not a toolkit. Even though it does have aspects of those things, it really is an idea. It's an approach. It's a way of going about your business, right?
Yeah. And especially when you put big test functionality in place, when you start doing like big testing and then you put together things like using Mocha and Karma, big tests in there, in that kind of test suite, is really just like interactors and the idea of big testing, right? There's nothing, right. I don't think there's anything right. else. And the interactors, all the interactors do is just give you an easier way to, a way to create composable like page objects. So you don't have to write, you have your nested components, but you don't have to write selectors for each element in the component, especially if it gets composed, right? So, but that's like a very small functionality that does a very specific thing. But big test itself, it takes a lot of work to actually, we had this first-hand experience on the project we're working on right now, is we're essentially introducing like Ember's acceptance testing, but for React, right? In a React project, and having to explain to people, what is it about this that actually makes it a really good idea? And having people in the React world see that this is actually a really good idea. It's kind of incredible. It's when you actually try to sell something to somebody, like convince somebody that this is a good idea, is when you realize like how inadequate your understanding of the idea it really is. You really have to start to like break it down and understand, what is it about this that is a really big idea?
Yeah, I completely agree 100%, because, to be clear, we've actually been doing this now for 2 years almost. So, this is not the first React project where we've put these ideas in place. But I think in prior examples, we just kind of moved in and it's like, we're going to do this because this is what we do. And we have firsthand knowledge of this working, right? Because we've operated in this community where this is just taken on faith that this is the way you go about your business. You have a very robust acceptance test suite. And because of that, you can experience incredible things. When you and I were talking it before the show, we were kind of commenting on, inside the Ember community, you can do impossible things because of the testing framework, right? You can upgrade from Ember 1 to Ember 3, which is a completely and totally separate framework. Basically, you're completely and totally changing the underlying architecture of your application. You can do it in a deterministic way. And that's actually, that's incredible.
And what's interesting too is that the React core team kind of hinted about at this also in their blog post about Fiber, or like moving to Fiber, because one of the things that they talked about there is that like knowing how the system is supposed to behave on the outside allowed them to change the internals of the React framework. So this is specifically about Test Suite for their React framework, but it allowed them to change the internals of the framework because they were testing kind of on the outside the system kind of as a black box, and it allowed them to change the internals, and their test would essentially stay the same. So they're also, so this idea of acceptance testing your thing is really fundamental to how Ember community operates, but other communities have this as a big idea as well. It's just applied in different areas.
Right. And so applied to your actual application, this is something that's accepted in one place, but it's not an accepted practice in other places. And so, but you can make your argument one of two ways and say, I have experienced this and it's awesome. And you can do architectural upgrades if you follow the patterns laid out by this idea. And that works if you have a very, very high trust relationship. But you don't always have that, right? Nor should you. not everybody is going to be trusting you out of the box. So, you know, you're going to have to lay out the arguments and really be able to illustrate conceptually, practically, how this is a good idea, just so that people will actually give it a try.
And it takes a lot, right? Because it's not... one of the reasons why it was easier for us to introduce big testing to the current project we're working on is because we were able to write... We've done the implementation for this in a previous project. So when we were convincing people this is a good idea, we're like, look, your test suite can be really good. It's going to be really fast. And look, here's actually... we've done it before. So the actual process of convincing people that a big idea is a really good idea is actually kind of a complicated process that requires a lot of work and partially requires experimentation. You have to actually put an implementation in place and show, look, this is actually, you kind of have to build up on your successes to be able to get to a point where you can convince people that this is actually a really good idea. People who have not heard about this idea, and especially people who might have counter, they have people of authority in their community that have counter views, you know. So for example, mm-hmm. Quite often you'll have, when it comes to big test, when you bring up big test, people will reference a blog post by a Google engineer that talks about how functional testing or acceptance testing is terrible, right? And you have to actually, for a lot of people, a Google engineer means a lot, and that person makes really good points, but that's not the complete idea, right? Because the complete idea is not just about having an acceptance test suite or end-to-end test suite. It's a certain kind of acceptance test suite. It's an acceptance mm-hmm. test suite that mocks out at boundaries, so you don't have to, so you don't make API requests to the server. You make an API request to a stubbed out server using something like Mirage or whatever that might be, right? So the big idea, it has nuance that makes it functional, but getting people who are completely unaware, who don't necessarily look up to you and as an authority, to believe you, yes, this actually sounds like a really good idea. It is not a trivial task.
No, it's not. Because the first time you try and explain it, you're arguing based on your own assumptions. So you're coming to it safe in the knowledge that this is a really, really good idea based on your firsthand knowledge. But that means you're assuming a lot of things. You're assuming a lot of context that you have that someone else doesn't. And, you know, they're going to be asking questions. You know, why this way? Why this way? Why this way? And so you have to generate a framework for thinking about the entire problem in order to explain the value of the idea. And that's something you don't get when it's just something that's accepted as a practice, right?
I think simulation is actually a really good example of that. Like, if you haven't had experience with Mirage, if you don't know what having a configurable server in your tests does for you, you will probably not realize that similar ideas apply to, for example, Bluetooth. That when mm-hmm. you're writing tests for your Bluetooth devices, you're writing tests for an application that interacts with Bluetooth devices, you actually want to have a simulation layer for Bluetooth so that you can configure it in a kind of similar way to the way you would configure Mirage for a specific test. You want to be mm-hmm. able to say, look, this Bluetooth device is going to exist, or I have these kind of Bluetooth devices around me. They have the following attributes. You know, they might disconnect after a little while. Like, there's all kinds of scenarios that you want to be able to set up so that you could see how your application is going to respond. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't seen a simulation in something like with something about Mirage, you're going to be going like, I don't know, what the hell? Like, why is this really helpful? Right.
Right. It seems like a lot of work. One of the things that we've been working on, as I said, is trying to come up with a framework for thinking about why this is a good idea, because we can't just assume it. It's not common knowledge. For example, one of the things that we've been developing over the last year and more recently, you know, in the last few months, is trying to understand what makes a test valuable. Like, at its essence, what are the measures that you can hold up to a test and say, this test has X value? Obviously, something like that is very, very difficult to quantify. But if you can show that and you say, this test has these quantities and this test has these quantities and we can actually measure them, you know, then it's going to allow people to accept it a lot more readily and try it a lot more readily. So the ideas that we're playing with right now is that you kind of have to evaluate a test on speed. Tests that are fast have an intrinsic value, or rather tests that are slow, the upside that you gain from the test is very quickly bled away or offset if the test is slow. So I can have a very comprehensive test that tests a lot of high value stuff, but if it takes 3 days to run, it's going to be basically worthless. Another axis on which you can evaluate it is in terms of coverage. And I'm not talking about coverage of lines of code. I'm talking about use cases and units of assemblage. So there's the module. Those modules are then stitched together into components. Those components are stitched together into applications. Those applications are downloaded onto browsers. And you know, I would consider it a different unit of assemblage. Your application running on Firefox is a different assemblage than your application running on Chrome is a different assemblage than your application running. You know, you have this axis, which is the coverage of your unit of assemblage, right? That's another way that you can evaluate your test. So if I have a test that runs only on Node in a simulated DOM, there's a cap. There's an absolute cap on the value of that test, and it cannot rise above a certain point. And the other thing, another axis that we've identified is isolatability and ability to, you know, run a test. So if I have a test suite comprised of 1,500 tests, but if one fails in the middle, I have to restart the test from the beginning, that's going to decrease the value. Maybe it's related to speed, being able to run the tests without having to install a bunch of different dependencies. So that's another axis. And so trying to really understand the variables there, that's something you have to be very systematic about thinking about the test so that you can actually take your idea and explain it to someone who's not coming at it from first principles, right? Like imagine you have to explain an if statement to somebody who's never programmed with an if statement before.
That's going to be very difficult. And
it's going to be difficult, right?
Yeah, it's and this is one of the really challenging, like in general, it's very challenging to go from an experience that somebody had, like overriding somebody's experience, conveying your own personal experience is very difficult. And getting someone to experience something is very difficult, right? And so that's what I think a lot of the work that we've been doing over the last little while has been breaking down these problems into a way of understanding them so that we can actually explain why these things are important, right? Like we've had to do this recently with the Bluetooth work that we've been doing. Mm-hmm. We have a partner that's implementing a Bluetooth abstraction for mobile devices and trying to convey to them the value of being able to simulate devices. That's something that we, you know, we saw with Mirage. We knew that being able to simulate devices in tests in different environments is extremely valuable. We know this firsthand from our experience, but trying to justify to them why we think this is important and why they should rejig all of their thinking about how they're going to architect this middle layer between the native APIs and the application APIs, why they should rejig this layer to make it so that it will allow for simulation, like convincing very technical, very knowledgeable, and experienced people that these ideas are important. It requires kind of fundamental understanding of the value that they provide. And I think this touches on what really I think Frontside is going to be doing going forward is creating conditions for this kind of thought to be cultivated, to be able to like create business environment where our clients gain benefit from this kind of very deep insight, where insight that transcends the source of those ideas, right? Because there's certain ideas that are really fundamental and they're beautiful ideas that are, for example, like in React world, like a functional component is a really beautiful idea. It's a really simple concept. And what's, you know, kind of going along with, you know, what you're saying about this kind of fundamental ideas, they will drive you to the next point that you couldn't even imagine, right? I think the work that the React Core team has done with, they've set out this functional component as a primitive, but it wasn't possible for a long time to really make that functional component a reality until they've gone through the process of actually understanding what connects all the dots so that you could actually eventually get to a point where like, oh, actually this hooks API is a way for us to enable the fundamental concept of having a component. Not only is it simple, but it actually works. Like you can write a performant application using this fundamental concept. So the work that we're going to be doing is, first of all, making it possible to have conversations at this level. So people that we're going to be working with, that work for Frontside, people, clients who we work with, companies that work with us, who partner with us, like it's going to be all to support creating this environment where we can have these kind of ideas. then being able to extract these great ideas from the frameworks and actually making them available across frameworks. You don't have to be locked into a specific community to be able to benefit from that. So like one of the first steps of what we're working on now is, like, now that we have understanding about big tests, we believe this is a good idea. We have ways to justify why it's a good idea. We have clients that have benefited from this good idea. Now we're in position to fill in the gaps that are missing from big tests from being something that could be used in any framework. We want it to be really easy for people to be able to say, I really love acceptance testing, but I have to work in a React project, or I have to work in a Vue project, or I have to work in Angular project. It's like, oh, no problem. I have big test. Big test is going to give me what I want. You know, it's the big test, the idea, but it's going to come with all the little pieces that you need to be able to assemble the functional test suite that is going to give you the benefits that Ember's acceptance test suite provides for Ember projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, why should you have to compromise on these things that are, you know, if it is a good idea and it is a fundamental idea, whether it's how you manage concurrent processes, whether it's how you manage testing, whether it's how you manage routing, why should you have to compromise? Why should you have to say, you know what? What's a comparable system? I love air conditioning. Why should I have to go into a car that doesn't have air conditioning because every single car has a different air conditioning system, or every single house has a different air conditioning system? I'm showing the fact that I live in Texas here by using this example, but we've developed air conditioning systems that are modular so that they can be snapped on to pretty much any house. And you don't have to build a custom thing for the circulation and refrigeration of air every single time, or have it just be like, it's part of the house, right? Or we have this wood that ships with ducts. It's like, no, we want to separate out that system.
You don't have to commit to living in a specific area to get the benefit of being comfortable, right? You don't have to give up comfort for specific areas. The good idea of air conditioning is not restricted to just one area. You can actually experience it wherever you go, and have it be available wherever you go. You have it be able to, like, if you move into a new house, you can install air conditioner, and now you're going to have like cool air. That's the kind of the theme, I think, of what we're going to be doing. But there's so much work to do, right? Because we're kind of, I would say, probably 30 or 40% into having, if we were to look at like big test as a big idea is used and is well known in our industry, we're probably maybe 5% on that. If we take into consideration like what it takes for us to be able to convey, what it takes to convince people this is a good idea, I think we're, you know, if you add to it, like, it'll probably add another 15%. So the next step is actually creating some tooling around it that would make it really easy for people to consume. Because right now, what's really unfortunate is that you have big test that is available. Like, if we set it up in a React project, doing it with Create React App right now is kind of difficult. So we're going to make that easier. But then companies still need to make a choice between like the ergonomics, for example, of Cypress, or the speed, the comfort, and the control that you have with big test. So we have to basically eliminate the need to make that choice by making the tooling that you get in Cypress, making that tooling available for big test projects. So that is going to kind of bring us up to, you know, maybe 60%. And then the remaining part is taking the software that enables the big idea and then making the software work across all different frameworks. So it's really easy to install. Like on Angular, it's just going to be, you just add a plugin and it, it gives you big testing. You don't have to rely on their unit testing, or you don't have to rely on their end-to-end testing that's using Selenium. You just have big test and it works just as well as you would, as it works in React, just as well as it works in, you could work in Ember, right? So you can get the benefits of that. So going through the whole process and then bringing it to the world this way, we have a lot of work to do, because every part of the architecture of building modern front-end applications requires this level of effort, right? Because we've got, if you look at routing is extremely inconsistent across frameworks. There are different opinions for every framework. There are different opinions how to implement it. And that's problematic both for an individual level and like a specific project level, because it's so hard to know what you should use. And in many cases, it's not complete. Like, what constitutes a routing system on React looks different than what would be in Ember. It looks different than what it is in Angular. And each one of them has their own trade-offs. So if you find yourself in a situation where you've been using React and now you have to use Angular, you have a steep learning curve. But this also has a interesting effect of like, well, we have a world now where micro frontends are a thing. there's a really good reasons why companies might want to use multiple frameworks for a single platform, right? Because different frameworks have different benefits and different teams based on the location might prefer a different framework. There's lots of different reasons why companies choose, and we want developers to be able to choose specific framework. But how do you do that when you need to have, like, basically have a micro front end architecture? You need to provide an SDK that provides a consistent user experience. Like, you want to provide an SDK that provides a consistent developer experience, but then that developer experience, a consistent developer experience needs to enable a consistent user experience, regardless of what framework the team decides to use. So now routing needs to be more robust. Routing without having strong concurrency primitives is going to be very limited, and it's not going to be as portable across frameworks as one that actually has very robust concurrency primitives. So now we'll start looking at concurrency. Now we've got concurrency primitives that are different for each framework. We've got Ember concurrency. We have Redux sagas. We have observables. You know, React is introducing suspense and their hooks. And now each one of those things is different. So now we need a concurrency primitive that is framework agnostic, that is externalized, that we can consume to build stuff. Now, you know, that's a piece of the routing system. There's other things, right? Like state machines. State machines are an important part of, if you look at the authentication system, the core of an authentication system is a state machine. How do you express a state machine in a way that is framework agnostic, in a way that works in every framework, right? That's an area that we need to explore. So there's a lot of work for us to do to take these big ideas and externalize them from the frameworks so that they can be consumed by frameworks and by applications that use these frameworks. That is a lot of work. And that's essentially what Frontside is setting out to do, is pull these good ideas and extract the pieces that are actually core to these ideas, and then see, like, make them available independently, and then see what that will provide. What will be, like, in a world where we have all of these pieces in place, and we have kind of the granular little pieces that we need to be able to have a really strong concurrency primitive. We have a great routing system that's using those concurrency primitives. We have a state machine mechanism that can work with any framework, has very comfortable APIs. We have all these pieces. What kind of collaboration will that allow? What is the world that will create, right? I think for people who are in the Ember community, we saw firsthand what it means for us to stand on the shoulders of giants, right? We have wonderful, brilliant people creating really awesome tools. Now, if that same level of collaboration was happening in a way that was framework agnostic, but we were all standing on the shoulders of giants and we were helping each other create something like this, what kind of world would that create? That's what Frontside is setting out to find out.
Yeah, and it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be really, really fun. It's going to be challenging. Like you said, there is a lot of work to do.
A lot of conversations to have. I mean, I think it's difficult to have these conversations because we all have good reasons for thinking certain things, and we need to, a lot of times it requires understanding each other to find a place. Core teams do this, right? It's getting everybody to align on where we want to go, provide leadership, like doing all of that work and doing it in a way that is actually possible, right? Because I mean, to create an environment with this kind of research is happening, it requires a lot of money. Like Charles and I cannot do this. You know, a small group of people probably cannot do this either, because we need real use cases. We need real projects to make sure that these ideas are not dream implementations or just like vaporware. We need the pressure of real projects, real clients' relationships to create software that is going to make a huge difference for their developers. So we need those relationships with clients so that we can actually create the conditions for this kind of thing to emerge. Like that needs to also happen for us to make this kind of a situation possible. So there is a lot of work to do, but it's a really worthwhile cause.
And I think that it's one of the reasons that we start with testing as the most important use case, because it's something that, you know, you don't want to be just saying, you know, hey, you want to come help us fund research to make everything better? You know, there is real pressure, there's financial pressure, and there's a duty to make sure that if a project has a deadline, that deadline is met. You want to come in at cost and on time. That's the goal of every project, and you want to try and strive your do your best to achieve that. And testing is an area where the research almost always pays off, right? I mean, where it has, clearly. Like, you can invest a lot of money and get a lot of reward in return, because you're losing so much money by not testing or by focusing your investment in testing on lower value targets.
For people that are familiar with acceptance testing, I think that just goes like it's a no-brainer, right? Acceptance testing just enables you that, right? So we're by putting a big test as a first kind of objective, but putting acceptance testing as a first kind of milestone, it sets us up to benefit in the way that Ember community has benefited, where the acceptance test now became a mechanism that made it possible for the framework to change, right? And so we're kind of setting up the same conditions. You're like, you know, when you start working with us, or with any of the companies that work with us, like, the first benefit you get is you get the acceptance testing. Now your developers are more productive because they know that they have the certainty that if something broke, they will know. If they change, introduce a breaking, like, broke something, they will know. But what that also gives us is a way of introducing change in a systematic way. So if we find that we have a new routing mechanism, we can start to refactor our React router setup to use this new routing mechanism, and we can do it safely because we have our acceptance testing in place. So in many ways, it's kind of like it's the first step, and it's actually
right.
Great first step for business, and is a great first step for technology. That's a kind of a really awesome overlap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we in the podcast with Dylan Kearns, we talked about this. Is like, step one is make experimentation cheap, because experimentation can be wildly expensive, and you can throw away a lot of money if you're just experimenting without constraints. And there is nothing like a great application/acceptance test suite that puts those constraints in a completely and totally unambiguous way. So I think that's actually a great summary of like our next decade.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's good ideas show you the great, like, perfect next step. And I think this is going to show us the perfect next future that we can't really imagine right now. But I do know one thing: this future is going to include a lot of people. Fundamentally, what we're setting out to do is a big idea. And so big ideas are brought to the world by a lot of people. And I think one of the things that's important is that we, from day one, we include everyone in the process. For anyone who's interested in these big ideas, we want to make it possible for you to participate. And so that's the reason why Frontside is going to have an RFC. So like on our Frontside website, we're actually going to start publishing RFCs. So the first RFC that we're going to have is going to be for Big Test, which is to lay out why Big Test is a big, good idea for front end for our industry. And there are actually, as we start talking to people, there's actually lots of applications beyond front end. But so we were going to focus on writing these RFCs and sharing them with the world so that we can include as many people in it as possible, so everyone can participate. And ultimately, hopefully that will have an influence on our industry and actually allow us to leverage these big ideas in a way that is not tied to any particular source of these brilliant ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hat tip to the Ember community for the whole RFC thing, which I guess they didn't invent either.
Yeah, they borrow it also, right?
Right.
But I mean, it's been adopted everywhere, right? And I think it's but it is a really interesting way of making people part of your process, right? And making it our process, right? As a our meaning, like, everyone who works with us.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you work with Frontside, that there's a client of Frontside, or you work with the company that is partner with Frontside, like, whatever that might look like, we want to start to create places where we can be having these conversations and together finding, like, surfacing these great ideas and making them part of our tool sets.
I think that's a perfect way to wrap up. Like I said, you pretty much described our next decade. Maybe, you know, we get more people, it's going to be significantly less, and we'll move on to the next thing even more rapidly. I am fully pumped. I'm ready to see this. There's a lot of work to do, and I feel great about getting to it.
I'm very excited about all the work that we're going to be doing. So let's get to it.
Yep. All right. We'll see everybody next time.
Well, thank you for listening. If you or someone you know has something to say about building user interfaces that simply must be heard, please get in touch with us. We can be found on Twitter at @thefrontside or over just plain old email at contact@frontside.io. Thanks and see you next time.